Good morning. Welcome back. Today we're going to start the sugya of Bar Metzra. Now, simply stated, what Bar Metzra, the din of Bar Metzra, is that if a person sells a property, the Bar Metzra, his neighbors, have the rights of first refusal. You sell your house, so your neighbors on either side have the right to pop up after the mechira, say that I am a neighbor. I'm a bar metzra. I have the right. I have the first rights to this property, and provided that he's ready to pay the buyer the amount that the buyer paid, he can force him to turn over the property to him. Now, this concept, we'll go through the details soon, but this concept needs an explanation. Why in the world does a neighbor have any rights to your property? He might be a neighbor. He may have been a friend of yours for many years. He may be nosy, but simply because he lives next to you, why does that give him the legal right to come up and to have the rights of first refusal? And why does he have the rights to demand that he get the property first? So the Sma, and it's really Ramban and Magen Mishnah, explain that Enochanami, al pi din, there's absolutely no reason why a neighbor should have any rights of a bar metzra. What does one property have to do with the other? However, the Ramban explains, the same way we know there's a concept of Kedoshim Tiyu. What is the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu? Kedoshim Tiyu is, the Torah gives many halachos about what we could eat, what we can't eat, who a person can marry. There are many halachos about a person's hanhaga. Zok the Ramban, even though a person can go ahead, he can follow every single mitzvah in the Torah, he can be careful, he can avoid every single law, but yet he can be a novel b'rishos haTorah. He can be a drunken, he can be and glutton, he can eat as much as he wants, he can drink however much, he can be a complete bal taiva, but yet he can do it in a way which is mutter, which is not technically violating any of the Yisuri HaTorah. On that, we have a general mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu, Kadesh Atzmecha b'mutter lach, that the Torah is saying that it's not enough simply to abide by the technical rules. You have to be a Kadosh, you have to be a Parosh, and you have to learn from the mitzvahs of the Torah how to act in other situations that are not specifically addressed. Zok the Ramban, the same way we have a mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu when you're dealing with Bein Adam L'Makon, there is a twin, the twin for Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is a mitzvah of Vosisa Yashav HaTov. Vosisa Yashav HaTov is a general klal. Person has to act in a way that is Yashav HaTov. It's fair, it's right. And Zok the Ramban, although the Torah has many Yisurim, it has halachos of Lashon Hara, it has halachos of Nekama, but the Torah cannot start micromanaging a person's life and give rules for every single possible situation that arises. And therefore, Zok the Ramban, the Torah gives a general klalim, the mitzvahs that are Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, and then there's a general klal of Sisa Yashav HaTov. A person has to learn from that, he has to go lifnim mishur sadin, and his hanhaga has to be yashav HaTov in everything that he does. Normally, Zok the Ramban, asisa yashav HaTov is something which is nitan, each person makes his own decisions. Each person has to use his judgments, what is yashav HaTov, he has to look at his situation and make a personal decision, what is the right thing for me to be doing in this case. Zok the Ramban, there are a few exceptions. There are some cases where Chazal went ahead and they said, this case is such a clear and overriding Yashav HaTov, they made a takana. And they made and they said in these particular cases, Yashav HaTov is not just a klal, it's not just something that you make your own decision, Chazal made a takana to enforce it. And the Ramban's example is our halacha of Dinah Debar Metzer. When a property is being sold, you have the Moore's case is talking about a field, so that's the example that we'll give. If you're selling a field, you're selling a farm. So if your next door neighbor, if he wanted to expand his farm, your property is vital to him. If he has to buy a farm somewhere else, he'll end up with two fields in two different places, he'll be schlepping his tractor back and forth, he'll have to irrigate them separately, it'll be extremely difficult. So for him to have the two properties together, for him to combine it into one big farm where he can work on it together, there's a tremendous benefit to him. To an outside buyer, to another investor, this is just another field. He can buy this field, he can buy any other field that's on the market. So over here, the concept of v'asisa yashar v'atoiv, the concept tells us that if you have a situation where, to one person, this means a lot to one person, this is his only option, and if he doesn't get this, there's a tremendous loss. To you, it's nothing special, you can go elsewhere. So along comes the concept of v'asisa yashar v'atoiv and says, leave it to the neighbor. Let the bar mitzvah buy the property. This way he'll be able to combine the properties, he'll be able to use it together, and you'll find a property somewhere else. So this schus, this right, although it comes from the idea of sisa yashar v'atoiv, it's not something which is inherently schus moment, nevertheless, it's enforceable. And in this case, Chazal said that the dina de bar mitzvah, if a person goes ahead, he buys a property, the bar mitzvah, the neighbor, has the right afterwards to wake up, to come in, and to demand that it be transferred to him at the original price. Now, because we are... No, it doesn't make a difference. At that point, he wasn't looking to expand. If right now he is looking to expand, if every time there's a sale, the neighbors would all have the right to claim the dinah of my metzer. Now, because this right comes from Mosiso Yashar V'atoiv, it's not a real mamonis, you're not a partner in your neighbor's property. It's just the Yashar V'atoiv says, give it to, let the bar metzer take it because he has a tremendous benefit. As we're going to see, there are many exceptions to this rule. And in general, the yisoid will be, whenever applying dina de bar mitzvah will cause a situation where it's not yashrus, where it's not toiv, someone else is going to lose out. So in those cases, Chazal said, there's no dina de bar mitzvah. The whole point of bar mitzvah is to create yashar v'toiv where it will be abused, where bar mitzvah will be used to hurt someone. There, we'll see in many instances, Chazal said that the dina de bar mitzvah will not apply. And therefore, just in a general rule, any time the seller will suffer a loss because of dina de bar mitzvah, it will interfere with his ability to sell the property, which happens quite often. There is no bar mitzvah. There's no yashar v'toiv in that case. We can't do yashar v'toiv to the neighbor at the expense of somebody else, and therefore the halachos of dina de bar mitzvah are going to be waived. Now, unfortunately, the dina de bar mitzvah are very often abused. More often than not, I've been sure this, that at one point during the real estate boom, probably the most common din Torah involved dina de bar mitzvah. Because whenever a property went up for sale, especially in Lakewood, so suddenly you'd have three neighbors popping up, one on each side, the other in the back, saying, I'm a bar mitzvah, I'm a neighbor, I have the first rights to buy the property. And all too often, the halacha, as we're going to see, it is very difficult to actually win a case of bar mitzvah. There are many tanoim, there are many conditions that need to be met. But all too often, it was used as sort of a leverage. In order to force the seller to come to terms, you basically say, I'm a bar mitzvah. If you don't sell to me, I'm going to tie this up in Besdin. Now, obviously, this is completely inappropriate, because if the whole point of bar mitzvah, the whole rights that are given to him is in order to facilitate a yashar v'toiv, in order to help people, so to use bar mitzvah as a stick to hurt someone is a stira to the entire concept, and in such cases we will not be able to apply the dinah de bar mitzvah. Now, although bar mitzvah is talking that halachas in the Gemara in the context of real estate, in context of selling one property that a neighbor has rights of first refusal, this discussion does extend to other cases, which I think may be more relevant to people who are not real estate investors. And that is, as we're going to see, every partnership, there is a discussion, there is of dina de bar mitzvah. If you're a partner, and a partner wants to sell a share, the same concept will apply. If you, instead of selling it to an outside person, instead of bringing in a third party as a new partner, the existing partners may have a claim of dina de bar mitzvah, which we'll, Mirtz Hashem, discuss. Another example, which there's a discussion, is when you're selling debt. The person owes money, the lender, for some reason, needs to raise capital. He's selling off the debt at a discount. So there is a discussion among the poskim that perhaps the borrower can claim dina de bar mitzvah. Because, now he's obviously not a neighbor in the physical sense, but since he is a party to this transaction, he's the one that owes the money, he may, under some circumstances, claim that I am the bar mitzvah. If you want to sell the debt, instead of selling it to someone else, sell it to me, and that would be yashar v'toyv. And lastly, and this is extremely common and a bit more controversial, is what happens if you have a neighborhood which is turning over, it was a goyish neighbor that is becoming Jewish, or sometimes it's in the opposite case, what are the halachos about selling or renting a property to a goy? So as we're going to see, there is a discussion in the halachos of Bar Mitzvah whether a landlord can do that, or whether the neighbors can claim you're causing me a loss and whether they have the right to prevent it. So these are the general. This is the general concept of the Bar Mitzvah. It's the rights of first refusal. That if you're a partner, you're a neighbor, you have the first right to the property. Now the first example in the Gemara that we had this morning was actually not a case necessarily of a neighbor, but it's a case of brothers or partners. So over there, the Gemara says, if you have two partners, and one of them sells his property to a third party, the halacha is the existing partners can claim dinin de mametzra, they have the rights of first refusal, and they can demand that the property be turned over to them. Even if there is a neighbor, if you have two partners own a property, and one partner sells his share to the neighbor, still the existing partner will be able to take it away because a partner has a higher priority over a neighbor. A neighbor is just someone who's next door. He can combine the fields. A partner is actually a partner in this actual field. He is a bailum here. He has rights to this actual property. So he will have the rights of first refusal. Now, many partnership contracts have such clauses of rights of first refusal, that if a partner wants to sell his share, that the existing partners have the first right to buy it. In halacha, this right exists even if there is no such condition, because it is a dinin de bar mitzvah. That being said, it is still a good idea to put it in the contract, because as we're going to see, there are many exceptions to the rule of bar mitzvah. And the same exceptions that apply to the regular bar mitzvah apply to the partnership din as well. And therefore, you are best off not relying on this, and you're best off negotiating and actually having in the contract that you have the rights of din de bar mitzvah. Now, the second case is where you're talking about a physical bar mitzvah. A property goes up for sale. So the halacha is, if anyone comes ahead and buys it, even though he actually closed, he paid for it, the bar mitzvah, the neighbor, has the right to come afterwards and say, I am the bar mitzvah, I am the neighbor, I have the rights to this property, and he can force the buyer to turn it over to him. So if you buy a house, you move into the neighborhood, and you move in, you're settling down, and suddenly there's a knock on the door, your friendly neighbor comes to say hello to you, welcomes you to the neighborhood, and asks you how much you paid for the house. So if you answer, you tell him you paid $400,000 for the house. He has every right to pull out a checkbook and say, okay, I'm the neighbor. I want this house. Here's your money. Goodbye. And that is the dinin de bar mitzvah. Now, how can he force you to sell it? So what's mavur is that when a person buys a property, the takana of bar mitzvah is we look at the buyer as if he's acting as a shliach for the bar mitzvah. We look at him as if he's acting as the bar mitzvah's agent. And therefore, when he makes a kinyan, when he does the closing, whatever, there's a shtar, there's a kinyan soder, whatever action, whatever kinyan he did in order to acquire this property, automatically, without any requirement of any other kinyan, we look at it as if you're acting on behalf of the bar mitzvah. We're looking at it as if you're acting on behalf of the neighbor. And as long as the neighbor comes, he's ready to pay you he's ready to reimburse you. It's his. You don't need any kinyan whatsoever. It's automatic.
Which neighbor?
Whichever one claims it. Correct. Whenever a neighbor comes, whichever neighbor is the one that was friendly enough to knock on your door and welcome you to the neighborhood, if he claims bar mitzvah, he will get it. Now, if there are multiple neighbors, then the halacha is they divide it among themselves. If you have four neighbors on each side, you're talking about a field which is obviously landlocked. So the halacha is assuming it's a square field, you just create an X, and create four triangles, And each neighbor gets a quarter of the field, the part that's adjacent to his property. Now, if only one comes, then he's the one that will claim by Metzah, and he will get the property. What? Okay, we'll get that in a minute.
What's the time frame? Day, 3 days?
Immediately. As soon as he hears about it, he has to act immediately. We'll discuss later what happens if he comes back 12 years later and said, I didn't know about it.
But
yes, it has to be right away. If you come to Beis Din and you claim by Metzra, so there's a discussion, we probably give him enough time to go home, pick up the cash, and come back to Beis Din and buy the person out. On the other hand, if he says, listen, I got to apply for a mortgage, so then nothing doing. You have to do it right away. This is one of the big traps and why it's very hard to claim by Metzra. Unless you have a line of credit already lined up, you come in ready to write a check, you're not going to prevail on by Metzra. The closing. A contract is really nothing more than an agreement to come to a closing in the future. It doesn't belong to the buyer yet. So if the whole point is that the buyer acts as a shliach, so then it's after the closing is when this the clock would start ticking, and it's after the closing when he would have to come and come up with the cash.
Is there any fee on the seller to ensure that nobody comes in as a bar mitzvah? For example, the seller knows the halacha, he'll go to his name before and shine, that's it.
Okay, so that's a reasonable assumption. It is only partially correct. We're going to discuss what happens if the buyer or the seller approach them by Metzra in advance. But just the short answer is that the dinim de bar Metzra it's not an obligation of the seller. It's not the seller's problem. The seller owns the property, he can keep it. If he wants to sell it, he does not have... The ikur chiyuv is not for him to go ahead and find the bar mitzvah and sell it to him. The ikur chiyuv is the other way around. That the buyer, when he buys it, is acting on behalf of the bar mitzvah. And therefore, we'll see, the seller in general has no obligations. He can ignore the entire parsha. When the buyer, when he buys it, will then have to deal with the bar mitzvah if he pops up. Now, as an Eitz HaToyva, because buyers might be reluctant, they want to know what's doing, it is a good idea for the seller to find out what the story is, to approach the bar mitzvah and get his waiver, however that will be done, because it'll simply make it life easier for everyone. But the chi of bar mitzvah was the ikur put on the buyer.
How does that then reconcile the concept of clear title?
Well, it is a clear title. It is a clear title, but it is a clear title that someone has the right to say, you are acting as my agent, and therefore you obtain that clear title from me. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. That's true. But the point is, the seller has no obligation to sell it. He can keep it. He can stay here. So therefore, when they made a takana, the takana was, and the truth is, many say it's not even an isser per se on the buyer. What the takana was, when a buyer comes in and buys a property next to a bar mitzvah, takana was he is bal karchai, acting as a shliach for the bar mitzvah, and therefore it will become the bar mitzvah. So it's not a chiyuv per se in before the fact. It is a halacha that we are automatically acting as a shliach, and therefore the bar mitzvah will get it. And we're going to see one of the problems with dealing with the bar mitzvah is that the bar mitzvah is really afraid in many cases to approach the seller before the transaction and show his cards, because if you're selling your property and you know your neighbor desperately wants to expand, what's going to happen next? You're going to raise the price because you know he needs it. You know he can't go elsewhere. There it has value to him that it doesn't have to anyone else. And therefore, that's why we're going to see the bar mitzvah usually, the halachos of bar mitzvah is after the fact. Once you sold it to a third party, it's an arm's length transaction, presumably it was at the fair price because that person had no special interest, then the bar mitzvah goes to him and says, thank you, but I have the right to it. But the bar mitzvah does not have to approach the seller because that will put him in a weaker position and it will force him to pay more than its real value.
Well, the bar mitzvah is like the chatam koror. He wants it, so let's jump
If the bar mitzvah is negotiating and he has a deal, then the same way Adimapu would apply to somewhere else would apply here. But the case here is the bar mitzvah is keeping quiet. The bar mitzvah over here is keeping quiet. He doesn't want to show the seller that he's interested because he doesn't want the seller to jack up the price. Someone else comes in and in all innocence buys the property. Now by the din of bar mitzvah is the neighbor can come to the buyer and say, give it to me. If the bar mitzvah tells the buyer, stay away, this is mine, I want to go after it, and he's mahapech, then enachami. He's not worse than any other mahapech harara. Okay, very good. Rashidus Rabbeinu Tam, for exactly that reason, is there's no din of the bar mitzvah on houses. Because, your logic, when you have two properties, two farms, you put them together, now you have one big farm, it's a machaya. If you have two houses, the fact that they're adjacent to each other makes no difference. Now that being said, although this is the Rashidus Rabbeinu Tam, again, we'll get to it in a future shiur, l'halacha rov rishonim argue on Rabbeinu Tam, and they explain there are benefits to having two houses together. Either you'll expand, you'll knock one, you'll subdivide. There is some benefit of having the properties together. But if you're dealing with a situation where there is no benefit to having the two houses together, and this is what very often happens, you have a regular block, a house goes for sale, the bar mitzvah jumps up simply because it's a good deal, and he plans on flipping it. But there's nothing, you can't combine them, you're not subdividing. There's absolutely no real benefit. In that case, you would be right, and there would be no Yashav Atoif.
When the sale price is determined by once the contract is signed. So the whole reason why the bar mitzvah is waiting, he's keeping quiet, because he doesn't want to get cheap. But once they go to contract, he knows how much is being sold for.
Okay.
Why isn't that the case to Yashav Atoif, that the seller should not allow the buyer to have to go through the whole process, get a mortgage, get everything, and then tell him right afterwards?
Again, the seller doesn't know. The seller doesn't know. It's always the bar mitzvah. Now, as far as the why we're not worried about the lekach doing tircha, so again, there are two separate issues. As far as the fact that there are expenses involved, it is very likely, we'll discuss this more later, it's very likely he'll get reimbursed for his expenses. Because to have the buyer pay for all the due diligence, his inspections, and then let the bar mitzvah take it away, that's right. For if there'll be a loss, there's a pesach tshuva that discusses that al tziyashav v'toiv, you'll have to reimburse the buyer for that loss. Now, as far as the tircha, that's true. He did get involved with tircha, but there's a very simple etza. You know, every property has three bar mitzvahs or however, go over to them and be mavara beforehand whether they are interested in where they're going to claim bar mitzvah. And if they don't do that, okay, so that we'll get to. That's the Gemara discusses Mishat Anibach, but it's certainly an eight to taver for both parties. Although there's no chiyuv per se, you know, this Divrei Akil speaks that very clearly. There's no iser per se of bar mitzvah. And you get this shaila, you don't have a chiyuv. If you want to go ahead and, there's no iser to buy a property because maybe one of the neighbors will want it. You can go ahead and buy it. If the neighbor claims bar mitzvah, it's a schus, it's a right that he has. And if he's, taka meets all of the conditions, which is difficult, but if he meets the conditions, you'll give it to him. So it's not an iser or a chiyuv. You don't have a chiyuv, but it certainly is an etz hatov. And that the Sma points out, had you done like that. So there's, it's a good idea. It's something which people will typically do because of the tircha involved in buying a property today. But if they choose not to, if they'd rather take the gamble and not talk to the bar mitzvah, that's their decision, and you know, they'll live with the consequences. Oh wait, for sale sign does not determine the price.
Even
a realtor, if there are two bids. Well, he can try. It's easier said than done. There are many, many instances where the price goes up and it's just fine. Second of all, who says $500,000 is the fair price? Maybe that's the inflated price that he put up for your benefit, but he says, no one's really going to offer you this price. If I don't come in, anyone else will offer at most $450. You're doing this for my benefit. So the Bar Metzor always has this claim. I didn't have to act earlier because I needed to protect myself. I did not want to show my cards.
What about the case where it's supposed to foreclosure and it's sold for a cheaper price? Can I get that? How can I want for that price?
Okay, good. Well, good. We'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so we're getting a lot of questions. We haven't started Bar Mitzvah yet, so let's just give it a little bit of time and start going through the halachas, and we'll just deal with the questions as we cover each halacha. So the first point is that Dina Bar Mitzvah is that we look at the buyer as an agent for the Bar Mitzvah, even though he didn't know about it. He thought he was buying himself a house. Once the Bar Mitzvah puts his claim, if he meets all the criteria, we look at the buyer as simply acting as his agent. And therefore, you don't need any other kinyan, you don't need any other transfer. It belongs to the Bar Mitzvah, automatically. Now, because of that, there's an interesting halacha, and that is, what happens if you buy a property? You bought the property, you financed it, you took out a mortgage, you put a lien on the property, and then the next day the Bar Mitzvah comes and says, listen, I am a Bar Mitzvah, give it to me. So, the way we just explained it, at what point does it become the Bar Mitzvah's? So the way we just explained it, we look at the buyer as if he was a shliach, as he was acting on behalf of the Bar Mitzvah. That means when he closed on the property, we now realized that he was closing, he was buying it on behalf of the Bar Mitzvah. It went straight to the Bar Mitzvah. It never belonged to this buyer. So this lien that he put on in between, he borrowed money, he put his mishab of the karka. He essentially put a lien on a property that he never owned. And therefore, the halacha is, the lien is batal. The Baal Choyev, the person who lent this person, who lent this buyer money, it's very nice he lent him money, but the lien that he got, the collateral that he got, never belonged to the borrower, to this buyer, and therefore the shibud is batal. Which means, the fellow closes on a house, he has a mortgage, so you have a mortgage, there's a lien on the property, al pi halacha, the mortgage is batal. So, it's like this. The reason why there's no hefzid over here is that when the Bar Mitzvah comes and wants to take away the property, he doesn't get it for free. So if the property was, if you bought the property for, there's $500,000 mortgage on the property. The Bar Mitzvah is coming, he has to now give the buyer the $500,000 that he paid. Now, the lender that only lent the money on this collateral will go ahead and say, listen, now that this collateral turns out it was fraud, it was inadvertent, but it was all a mistake, the lien is batal, give me back the $500,000. And that's what would happen. Now, Shibud Durab Nosin, the Bar Mitzvah, when he comes, will end up paying off the mortgage. But if for some reason that doesn't happen, the bottom line is that the mortgage, the shibud, was on a property that never belonged to the buyer, and therefore the lien itself would be batal. Now, arguably today, when there's a recorded lien, once you're dealing with a recorded lien, today there is a concept of dina malchus dina, so it is, again, it's likely, not a clear halacha, it depends on the sugya of dina malchus dina, but it is very likely that a Bezdin will say that the dina malchus dina, that concept of recording a lien, is something that cannot be overridden by Hilchos Bar Mitzvah, but it's a nice shayla, it is a nice din Torah, and it's just one of the interesting effects of Dina de Bar Mitzvah. Now, because the buyer is looked at as acting as an agent of the, as a shliach of the Bar Mitzvah, what price does the Bar Mitzvah have to pay? So the halacha is, if you send a shliach to buy a property, and he buys the property, so obviously, what you have to pay the shliach when you want the property is the amount that he paid. So regardless of whether he paid the fair price, whether he overpaid or whether he got a bargain, if he's your shliach, you have to pay him the purchase price, and then you get the property. So it means if the sale price was way above its market value, this buyer for some reason was desperate, he paid a premium for the property, so the Bar Mitzvah will have a choice. Either he'll have to pay this premium, or he will have to walk away. He will not be able to claim Dina de Bar Mitzvah. The same is true in the opposite case. If the buyer gets a phenomenal deal, he gets it at half price, way below market value. So, although he thought he got a metziah, since the Dina de Bar Metzra says he's acting as a shliach, he's acting as the agent of the Bar Metzra, so the Bar Metzra will have the right to say, take the amount that you paid and this bargain price and turn over the property to me. Now there is an exception to this, and that is, what happens if the buyer claims that this property was listed for $500,000? Now, I'm a close friend of the seller, and we're old childhood friends. We always do favors back and forth. So for me, he went down to $400. But for anybody else, nothing doing. The price was $500, and that's the amount that he wanted. So in such a case, if it's actually true, if you can prove that this discount was being given specifically for you, then we look at it as essentially the owner gave a present to the buyer. He gave the present to the buyer. He had no intention of giving a present to the Bar Metzra. And in that case, the Bar Metzra would have to pay the full price if he wants to make the claim. Now, what happens if you buy the property and then the value changes afterwards? In other words, the buyer bought it for $500 and then the price went up or down. So halacha is, it makes no difference. Because, as we said before, he's acting as a shliach, he's acting as an agent. We look at it as the original purchase was done on behalf of the Bar Metzra. So the Bar Metzra pays the original price and he'll get the property, and any loss or any gain is going to be his responsibility. Now, what happens, and this, if a Bar Metzra buys the property, if a person buys the property, and there's a fire. He buys the house. He's negligent. The next day, the house burns down. The Bar Metzra knocks. Actually, doesn't knock on the door. There's no door left. Bar Metzra comes and says, "I want to claim Bar Metzra on the property." Now here we have a problem, because the house is bought for $500,000. The house burned down. The land is worth $200,000. How much does the Bar Metzra have to pay? Okay, he was a shliach when the house stood. So the halacha is, if the buyer buys the property and then he's mazik it, he goes ahead and he's mazik the property, and then the Bar Metzra comes. The halacha is, Bar Metzra has the right to force the sale, but he can deduct the amount of the hezek, because you are my shliach, but you're not giving over the entire value, and therefore he can deduct the value, the hezek that was caused. Now, it's not yashav v'toyv. Because this buyer spent $500,000 for the property, and now he has to give it away for $200,000. So that's true. But on the other hand, even if he doesn't give it away, he had that loss regardless. The house burned down. So however you look at it, whether Bar Metzra comes and puts in a claim or not, he spent $500,000, and now he only has a plot of land that's worth $200,000. So either way, that loss is already a sunk cost. That hefzid is already gone. And therefore, it does not stop the Bar Metzra from coming and saying that you are mazik my property, and therefore I can claim Bar Metzra and deduct the hefsedim that there were. It's like this. The case in Shulchan Aruch is mazik, where he is a mazik biyadayim. The Atarist Tzvi talks about a case where the house burned down. He says if it burned down in bipshia, he says it would have the same halacha, and you'd only get the 200. If it burned down, but ba'oinus, there he says halacha would be different, and there the Bar Metzra would either have to pay the full amount, the full 500, or not. Now, an interesting case. Now, I don't know. It's just an interesting case. I don't know what the halacha would be. Is what happens: a person buys a house, and his plan is he wants to. There's a nice big property. It's an old house, so he buys the house, brings in the wrecking ball, flattens the house, and his plan is to put up a whole big mansion. The wrecking crew comes, knocks the house down, and right afterwards, my metzer comes. He puts in a claim. So in this case, l'chayri, he's a mazik. Assuming that what he did, the value of the property went down. L'maisa, he was a mazik. It may have been for good purpose, but l'chayri, in this case, he'll end up having a hefzid, because the metzer will be able to say, the house you paid $400,000 for this property. Now that you knocked down the house, it's only worth $300. You're a mazik biyadayim, and therefore you can be mesalik him with $300. Now it's a chiddush, but that's what should come out.
What happens if, like, the guy bought it, has insurance on the house, burned down? So did he get the insurance, or did he say no? Whatever it is, so didn't get insurance.
Okay, it's a nice shiloh, because it's one thing to say that the buyer is acting as a shliach for the Bar Metzra when he purchased the property. to create, make him into a shliach when he bought insurance, there's no such halacha. So I don't see any reason why the metzor should be able to claim the insurance. Now, if you want to argue now that it's insurance fraud because hayoyis al tzina de bay metzra, you're just a shliach, so you didn't have an insurable interest. Okay, I don't know whether when you're dealing with an insurance company, they will follow the lumdus of dina de bay metzra. So Miss Stama, you have the right bidinehem to put in the claim. No. So we'll see very clearly. If the seller says, I've been neighbors for 20 years, you never lent me any eggs, we've been fighting each other for, doesn't make a difference. It's not his din. Whenever a buyer buys it, it will automatically belong to the bay metzra. It's not his choice. Now, there's another case, well, we have two other cases, even if the seller made a shvua to the buyer, I'm going to sell you this property. Still, the halacha is that when the buyer buys it, it now belongs to my matzahs because the seller sold it to this buyer, but the buyer was acting as a shliach and the bar matzah will get it. Now, before the fact, if he makes a shvua, I will sell it to you, and then the bar matzah comes, then already the shach says you can be chayzer. Because the seller says, I only made a shvua, I only agreed to sell it to you. If you're not going to get it, I don't have to go ahead with my commitment. So after the fact, if he sold it, and now he wants to say, I died to Dahachi, I wouldn't have done it, nothing doing. But if he just commits to selling it to an outsider, and now the Bimetra says, if you sell with him, I'm going to get it, he has the right to back out. Now, just to take that case to the next step, there's a lot of discussion about ways to get around the din of Bimetra, which it's unfortunate. The whole din of Bimetra is Asisu Yashar Vatoiv. And we will find that there seems to have been a tremendous amount of effort to get around the obligation of Yashar V'Tayiv. There are a bunch of haramas that we're going to discuss. One of the ideas was very simple. In the sales contract, put in a penalty. That if the seller doesn't sell it to the buyer, there is a $50,000 knas. So in that case, someone suggested, there's no deed of Bimetzer. Because if Bimetzer comes and claims the property, the seller is now going to get hit with a penalty. If he gets hit, now that the seller gets hit with a penalty, that's not Yashar V'Tayiv, that's a Pseidah D'Moicher, and therefore, no Din of Bimetzer. So the Pesach Chuvah brings down nothing doing. Why? Because even if you have such a penalty, he says, first of all, it's a harama. When there's a harama, we're going to put Din of Bimetzer anyway. But even besides that, he says, you'll never have to pay the penalty. Because what's the penalty? The seller's penalty is if I don't deliver title to the buyer, I have to pay you $50,000. In this case, the seller did deliver. Now the buyer has a problem. The buyer is wearing two hats. He's a buyer, but it's a facade. He's really representing a third party. But the seller delivered it to him. The fact that he was a shliach and he has to turn it over because his din doesn't mean that the seller reneged on his obligation. And since the seller fulfilled his obligation, he won't have to pay the penalty regardless. So, like this, if you make a tnai that I'm selling it to you, al minas, you keep the property. But if anyone else, if bar metzra gets the property, then the sale is batel, that will work. But wait, but the effect is not, the seller doesn't have to sell it. Dina Metzer never says you have to sell it. Dina Metzer says when it's sold, by Metzer's first. So in this case, where you sold it al Tanai, so if there's a bitul al Tanai, if the by Metzer gets it, the sale is void and it'll go back to the seller. So what we're not looking to force the seller to give it to the by Metzer. We're looking to force that if there's a transfer, the by Metzer will get it. So this Tanai will help, but it'll help by being voiding the sale and just going back to where it was beforehand. Okay, and if, in fact,
the bar metzor comes, the seller will indemnify the buyer, whatever.
Okay, correct, enechanami. So in that case, you'll have the other svara of Mayim Chaim, that if it's a harama, any transaction that's done to void bar metzor, we're going to ignore. If, on the other hand, you can make the argument that there is a legitimate reason for this, and there's some real economic loss, and it's not a harama, then enechanami. But any deal, we're going to be a bunch of cases where The Gemara's example is you had a property, you wanted to sell it, you were afraid of a bar mitzvah. So what you did is you took a little area in the center of your property and you sold it to an outsider. Then you went ahead a few days later and you sold the rest of the property to that very same outsider. Bar mitzvah comes and says, I'm a bar mitzvah, give it to me. The buyer says, no, I'm also a bar mitzvah. Since I bought that property in the middle, I'm also a bar mitzvah to the surrounding property, give it to me. So technically that argument should be true, but the Gemara says if it's a harama, we just ignore it and the bar mitzvah will have all of his rights. What shita? Not a shita. The Maim Chaim brings down the tshuva and he argues on it. It's not like a machlokes rishonim. What?
In the case of the property as a hezek on the property, can the bar mitzvah actually today of the let's say he bought it for 500,000, became burned down, it's worth only 200,000. The mitzvah said, listen, okay, now you have to go and fix it up and give me a property. I'll give you 500,000. You have to add another 300,000, and he winds up paying $800,000 and only getting back 500 for it.
Well, it wouldn't work. It would really work the other way. It would work that the bar mitzvah would pay him $200,000 and take the property, which is the same $300,000 loss. It's just, you're just changing the flow, but the bottom line will be the same. But you can never force someone, whenever there's a hezek, you can never tell the person, I want to pay you, you go ahead and fix it. You can always settle the damage with just the dollars and cents.
What about the guy selling the cost of his bar mitzvah? The guy blasted the music, everything about it.
I hear. I don't think there's any discussion about that particular case.
We see things like this all the time in Muncie, where a house is there, sale sign goes up, sale sign goes down, not sure what happened. And like 6 months later, the house is knocked down, somebody's doing construction, it turns out somebody had bought the house and was doing it. Are we going to get to that timing issue?
We'll get to it. Again, dear Matthew, it has to be right away. We're going to discuss cases where the sale was done secretly, or where there's no way to know. But now, if the sale was done and it's recorded, and especially if there was a listing, it's very hard to argue 6 months later that you didn't know about it.
So there couldn't be really a case where a house was knocked down.
Correct. All these cases where we're talking about the value going up or down or the hezek, it's a bit uncommon, especially the change in value, because the time frame for bar mitzvah is rather short. You have basically you have to act immediately. It is rather uncommon. Knocking it down, it depends how quickly he moves. Where it's more nage is in cases where it was done quietly and secretly in a way that nobody should know about, there the time frame will be extended and there these cases will be more common. But enechami, all of these situations are extremely uncommon. Correct. If the listing price was higher and the actual sale happened at a lower price, the bar mitzvah, once he finds out that it was sold at this price, has the right to go ahead and claim deed in the bar mitzvah.
How does he know the price? Does he have to tell him the price?
So again, we'll discuss what he had, but he has to know about it. And if it's done secretly, if it's normal today, where the price is public information, it's recorded on the transfer. But if it's done in a way where the metzer it's done quietly in a way the metzer should not find out about it, because you don't want him to come, and then he does find out about it, he will very often be able to come later and make a claim. Now, one exception to this, although changes in value and everything we said that you're as an agent, it's like it was by metzer from day one. However, if a person is oichel peiros, the buyer buys the field, he eats the fruits, he grows crops, and then the bar mitzvah comes and claims it. Again, usually he doesn't have that long, but in a situation where he does, the halacha is he does not have to return the peiros that he ate. When he's makalka, when he destroys, he's responsible for the hezek. But if he normal use, he eats peiros, there he does not have to reimburse the bar mitzvah for the peiros that he ate. Now, this is an important halacha, because what that means is, if a bar mitzvah comes and claims it, so as you bought the house, you bought it, you moved in, you're all happy, you finally found a place to live. And the next week, the bar mitzvah comes, he claims bar mitzvah, he throws you out. Now, to add insult to injury, l'chayra he can say, since you were my shliach, the house was always mine. If the house is always mine, you lived in my house for a week, I want rent. So this, the Mefarshim say, is doima to achilas peiros. that since it's just the normal hishtamshus, it's not a hezek, it's not a kilkel, so in this case, the bar metzer will not be able to make such a claim. On the other hand, if you did not live in the house, if you rented it out to a third party, so there, the same halacha would apply. Mali eating the peiros, or Mali renting it out and using the money. However, there is a suggestion in the Mishpat Shalom that perhaps if the rent is still be'en, if you didn't spend the money, and the same thing by peiros, if there are peiros that were not spent, they're still there, they already, there are sheets that hold that you will have a claim. Again, we'll go through that in more detail next week.